I had a bad dream the other morning. I was trying to help a situation. That was my intention. But as I split the object of my attention in two, I realized something else was going to happen. If you can imagine splitting a lobster, still alive, in two just before baking it, then at that last knife stroke, realizing that you won't be able to put the lobster back together again. Granted, this concern isn't really common when you're thinking of cooking lobsters, but the deep sense of having done irreparable harm woke me out of a sound sleep with a shudder. This disturbing dream got me to consider this concept of splitting in two, and that's the topic of today's talk. Some years ago, I had a client who was beside herself as a result of a horrific event that occurred in her family when she was a little girl, about 3 years old. Personally, in 1976 or 77, I went to a famous psychic in Brooklyn, and in a session, he asked me what event occurred between the ages of 8 and 10 that split me into a loser from the winner. These two situations brought me to the point where I want more awareness about this idea. I want to know, one, when our energies, that's our thoughts, our feelings, our words, our actions, caused a split in another person. We were the splitter, if you will. We were the provider of that energy. The second thing is I'm interested in understanding is when other people's energies seem to have caused a split in us. And then third, and I'm wondering if this is probably the more important of the three, is when our energies caused a split in us, ourselves. Maybe being split in two is a standard aspect of life. We resist it, you know, because it doesn't sound good, it sounds painful, but mainly because we don't understand this process that seems to be natural and necessary. Now, physically, we begin life as when a sperm and an ovum join together. Then this fertilized ovum starts splitting in two. Cell mitosis is accepted by all of us scientifically as well as normal, natural, and necessary for the growth of the fetus. So, mitosis is the word that we use to label this action of splitting in two. Couldn't we say that when we're born, when you're born, when I'm born, that's really the process of splitting in two? Couldn't we say that we've got a seed that we want to germinate, that now it's splitting in two once its husk is either dissolved by moisture or pulled apart? Doesn't that seem natural? So I'm trying to understand this principle of splitting in two, both as it benefits us, because it's natural, and as it causes human suffering. I imagine myself right now as a single unit as I wrote that sentence. However, even as I was doing that, I wanted to call a hardware store to check on the availability of a product that I know they used to have in stock. So, Is that thought process that I just described an example of our competing attention-intentions? One attention-intention flow wants to continue writing about splitting in two, but the other attention-intention flow wants to make the phone call, wants to take action related to that interest, that desire. Before I began journaling on that morning, I dealt with a person's question about ADHD in her 4-year-old daughter. That little girl is the older of two girls. Was she split in two when the second daughter was brought home from the hospital? Is she struggling now to direct her attention-intention flows? Did she interpret the energy of her baby sister to be about her and use it to split her? Is she now split in two? One of her is me before my sister was born and came home, and me after my sister was born and came home. Are those the two personas that she's dealing with? When I decided to end this journaling on this day, that session, and make the phone call, am I splitting in two? When I decide to take action, do I usually have an image of who I am, what I'm doing, or what I will have as a result of that action? If I do, that would be cool. And I could say, wow, that's really a mindful approach to being, doing, and having. When I follow that avenue, when I follow that stream of action, that electron flow, I'm doing it mindfully. So I have a good sense of what will result. On the other hand, if I take the action and it results in negative feedback from somebody else or bad feelings about myself, from myself, and so on, then maybe that splitting in two will produce this. The me who took the action and the me, the lesser me, who should not have taken that action. It might become even more problematic if now there's a me that doesn't like me that took the action, or the me that took a bad action. The words whole and heal come from the same root word originally. So how can we heal, become whole, if life seems to set us up to make a split in two over and over again as part of the process of being alive? I tried to consider the people that I dealt with yesterday and look at them and consider if they had two possible selves. So I'm looking at an individual and I'm opening my mind to the idea that they have two selves and they're going to represent or display or demonstrate one or the other and maybe ping back and forth. And so that was interesting to me to do that. So my wife Mary Ann and I were going to go out to dinner. We were going to have a couple of drinks and sit at a bar and have a small meal. So one of the people at the bar, as we were there, was a bartender. He's an older guy. I'm thinking in his 40s, but maybe hard living. And we've seen before and had conversations with him before. So he's got a lot of experience. He was a storyteller playing to the other people at the bar. There were a couple of couples. And it was obvious that he was on. Every once in a while, he'd come out of that mode for an individual conversation, you know, when he would come over and talk to either me or Mary Ann individually. But then he would go back to being on as he was acting out in front of these other couples. The other bartender was a young man named Gustavo, and he basically was what you see is what you get. He was one person. He was one person when we arrived. I watched him. He seemed to stay that one person no matter who he interacted with, whether it was us or people to our right or to our left. It was interesting. And I thought, maybe Gustavo hasn't learned how to split in two, like an actor, or maybe he hasn't seen the need to split in two. Maybe his background, his family background, doesn't make that necessary. Maybe he has no experience doing that. Then I thought, well, maybe it's because English isn't his first language, even though he spoke English very well. Maybe it was because he was focusing his attention on each person he was speaking to, and he didn't have any energy or very little energy to focus on how do I look, am I cool, and are they liking me, that sort of thing. He was really paying attention to the signals that were coming from the people that he was serving at the bar, and he really wanted to make sure he was understanding them correctly. It was obvious to me that on the other side of Mary Ann there were a couple of louder conversations going on. Not unpleasant, just, you know, more gregarious, more outspoken, maybe more alcohol-induced, and the bar was not very busy at all. So the couple just to Mary Ann's left, the woman seemed to be posturing, puffing up, and the guy at another location at the bar seemed to be recruiting people to his political points of view. He puts out an insult, seeing who reached and grabbed it and embraced it. And there was showing off going on. So you could tell that from the languaging that was going on. You know, aren't I cool, aren't I cool, aren't I cool? Not in those words exactly, but you could see the intention behind the delivery of the words. So I was seeing the, all fill in a whole bunch of hyphens in this, the public at the bar persona was being displayed, and the private at home persona was not showing up right then. When you think about the behaviors at the bar, I could see this concept that I'm prone to now because of Christ's returns. Look at bonding and rejecting. You could see I'm bonding with you, or I'm trying to get you to bond with me. I reject you, or something else. So I had that now frame of reference. So I started talking to the woman to my right. Her name was Mary. And because I had to ask her to move her purse in order for me to have a seat at the bar, and she looked like she got a little bit interiorized or intimidated, even though I was as gentle as I could in that request. I wanted to reestablish communication with her and to see if make this a win-win situation, if you will, rather than having her energy squashed by somebody else coming to the bar. Anyway, it was nice having a conversation. Mary was from Boston. She split her time between Boston and Naples, and she would speak about what she loved about Naples, and there were a real, real lot of them, but she's not ready to retire to Naples full time. But when she was talking about what she really liked about Naples, she would finish the end of the sentence by rejecting other people who didn't exhibit the same level of fascination or interest with things that she did. So instead of staying in bonding, which is where the sentence would begin, you know, I love this, I love that, I love that, she would finish in, but I don't understand why people don't appreciate the same thing. So it seemed like she had the habit of splitting into two. One Mary was bonding, and one Mary was rejecting. Bonding obviously felt good to Mary because she would brighten up, her eyes would shine, you know, it was like, I like talking about the things I like. But that rejecting was an attempt to feel good by minimizing or making other people appear to be less understanding, less appreciative, maybe less evolved, less caring than she was. What's real clear to me is you can't really sow seeds of rejection and expect to harvest bonding. Now, happens all the time. Talking heads on TV are constantly doing that, but they're being paid to do that. They're being paid to throw rejection out there. People that think they can start with low vibration and express it, and it's going to produce a harvest of high vibration, are going to be disappointed. Imagine these two scenarios about how splitting in two happens. Number one, let's say we're doing some activity, and either we or somebody else brings another more interesting activity to our attention. We split in two. We are, whole bunch of hyphens between these words, we are person doing activity A and person who goes to do activity B. You can hear that there's bonding with A and then bonding with B, kind of a split. There's nothing traumatic occurring with that split, and the split is not caused by trauma. The second scenario goes like this. If we're forced against our wills to do or to participate in an activity B, we have a traumatic split. We are the person doing activity A. Again, that's a whole bunch of hyphens. And we're that person willingly. And then we are person doing activity B unwillingly with resistance. We could say that this is bonding with A persona, but a rejecting of B persona. This split is even more problematic because I think this is where it can lead. Is we're not just talking about the activity A and B, but we're going to end up talking about the conflict between person A and person B. I believe there's a real high likelihood that this conflict between person A and person B, which we are both, is going to lead to self-rejection, struggle, anger, depression, and maybe even physical symptoms like illness. This in-person war between A and B that we're both of is going to have this kind of a soundtrack. Why didn't you stop that? Why did you cause that problem in the first place? What did you do that made that happen? Why didn't you handle it? Why didn't you protect our individuality, our safety, our privacy? Or it could be even more accusatory. You did something wrong, something bad, something evil. That kind of self-talk leads to a widening split and obviously more pain. I am willing to bet that there are patterns to people splitting in two. My wife Mary Ann uses a personality profile referred to as DISC. And I think that personality test gives examples or maybe clues as to what those splits are likely to be when that person with that dominant personality is under stress. So the D stands for dominant. This is a person who does. He's a doer. This person gets things done. They take action. But under stress, they split into a screamer and a demander. I stands for influential, is a person who talks, likes people, socializes, but under stress, under intense demands, splits into somebody who is very accusatory, somebody who is very blaming, finger-pointing. S stands for steady. This is a person who is calm, tends to pacify situation, doesn't like waves, doesn't make waves, tries to keep everything balanced. And under stress, they try even harder to keep everything under control. The C, conscientious, is an information-oriented person. They think, they reason. And under stress, they think they need to withdraw to get more information. They're looking for more information to solidify the ground they're standing on. I'm thinking that perhaps these DISC splits at the start are attempts to bolster the identity or our individualized ego personalities to keep us secure. When things don't go the way we want, we perceive that this is a threat. That's standard. And the stress of that demand to have what we want when we want it leads to that split. We intensify and we add energy to that persona. With myself, I see a love of information because it's interesting. But I also see a know-it-all. I see a compassionate, accepting person, and I see a demeaning, denigrating attitude toward the awareness of others under threat. If I wanted to, I probably could label those characteristics a little bit more simply about I want to draw awareness to me, or I put out information. I could be kind and gentle interaction with people, or I could be hammering other people. It seems to me that demands might be the factor that starts most energy flows. If we recognize demands as including desires, requirements, orders, instructions, our instincts, our have-tos, our want-tos, our shoulds, our shouldn'ts, rules, our needs, etiquette, social mores, on and on, we're going to have a better idea of the processes of this growth and splitting and how they happen. Let's say a demand is imposed on us internally by ourselves. I like that. I want that. I need to do that. Or it's imposed externally by others. We should be able to feel that really easily. That if we're a little bit mindful, if we pay attention, we're going to notice that impulse. We can feel that push or pull in that given direction. And as we begin to consider our responses to the demand, that the splitting in two, as it starts, we're going to be the person before the demand response began, and we can imagine the other us's in various ways. Under stress, the variations of us that we can split into are kind of limited. We can split into the fierce cave person willing to fight, or into the cave person whose instincts say, run, run, get away, avoid. That's a very limited menu of options of the personas that we can create when we're under stress. Another way to look at the situation is to use our access to the emotional states, the 10 emotional states that I use. I find it a real convenient way to look at where we could be energetically, attitudinally, at any given time. And it can give us an idea of what images or personas would be available to us. The 10 states: shame, apathy, grief, fear, lust, anger, pride, courageousness, acceptance, and peace. I've gone from low to high. You could go, in shame, we can split in two. One of those would be, we're defective. That would be the identity that would be very easy to choose for a person who splits under the pressure of shame. Above that is apathy, where that pressure of and demand could cause that person to have an attitude, life is impossibly difficult. You can just imagine this as we go up. The next one is we'd be talking about grief, where the focus, the energy would be on the pain and sadness of our decisions and the losses and how we could feel those things. And it goes on and on. If we don't reach out for something better, we're basically condemning ourselves to the state we're currently in. That means our awareness, our thinking, our feelings, and the physical conditions that we're experiencing in our lives, including our body and our material possessions, basically, they're hard to change. They're resistant to change. Why? Because we're not trying to split. We're resisting that natural movement toward something better, toward growth, toward healing, toward fulfillment of need. Another way to perceive how we split in the process of attending to demands that come to us from ourselves or from others is to consider this idea of little circle, big circle, equal circle as the model. As we put our attention on an object, if a demand to be or do or have gets activated, we can notice that there is a split in two. If we feel the little circle impulse, this we're going to feel ourselves shrinking, becoming less than, and trying to go into self-protect or hold back. Should be pretty easy. Or run away, flee. We know that this is a fearful, disempowered state. Survival says, get out of town. If we go into the big circle, that's a different state. We know that we have just split into this fearful, still fearful, just like the little circle. But in this case, anger is seen as being available. So this is a fearful, angry, fight persona that thinks by attacking the threat that they perceive, they are going to ensure their survival. The equal circle really corresponds to this natural impulse, this spiritual core impulse that we have to reach for something better. I think that persona is always available to us. As a coach, the goal of helping a person to access or to bond with this idea of reaching for something better, kind of an identity, while not rejecting the more fearful, lower vibration identity, is key. We don't have to hate one part of us in order to bond with another part of us. We don't have to hate other people in order to have what we want. So where does the reaching out for something better reach to? Well, we can reach into our memories, cellular memories, our experiences, all the events, all the images that we have from the past. We can reach out to the unknown and try to gain awareness. We can reach out to other sources of information, next door neighbor, people, gurus, books, search on the internet, and so on. And we can reach out to divine consciousness, seeking enlightenment. I think Abraham of Abraham Hicks would say the split we are faced with is identifiable as a better feeling and a worse feeling. Better feeling or a not better feeling. And so now, reach for whichever you want. Over the years, I think we've heard of this split, this different thing. The high road, oh, he chose the high road. Oh, he chose the low road. The choice between light and dark, between high vibration and low vibration, the choice between love and fear, and there's got to be a whole bunch of other ways that we've described this split, this fork in the road that we experience over and over again. So, since splitting in two is going to occur every time we're faced with a demand, or so it seems with me, it's important to understand the process and to see how we can become effective at this naturally occurring process of splitting into two. A lot of our mental, emotional, and physical behaviors are habits. Habits can be time-saving patterns, right? We do it so we can be efficient. And they free up the mind. But as they free up the mind, they also remove or reduce the element of mindfulness from the activity. And we can become like robots. Most of us are familiar with habits that are so practiced that at times we wonder if we did the actions at all. Here's a common thought, right? I don't remember doing that. Did I shave? Did I brush my teeth? Did I, you know, comb my hair? Did I make that call? That's when the habit is really in charge. When we don't think, we can't really make another choice. The choice is habitual. We previously made the choice, and we won't upgrade it unless we think. It's automatic. We're on automatic pilot. And a lot of times, prejudices and bigotry is really that. It's refusal to think another thought about something. Somebody gave us some information, or we accepted it, or we created it ourselves, and we won't rethink it. We won't upgrade. I think that our values and our ideals and our goals can serve as, magnetic guideposts as we travel through life. When we ignore those important aids that keep us on track, keep us going toward where we have determined that our values encourage us to go, we're going to end up being controlled by our habits. If you look back at your life, I'm going to bet that you, like me, will notice that our mistakes, right, our experiences of being ineffective, followed an unwillingness to listen, an unwillingness to learn, an unwillingness to think a new thought for oneself. Instead, we follow the momentum of our habits and or the pressure applied by external forces, other people. The act of splitting in two requires energy. Where do these energies come from that make the split? And where do the energies come from that sustain the newly split persona? The answer is the energy comes from either the connection to divine consciousness or the connection to the human ego consciousness. If our thoughts and feelings and words and actions are sourced from the divine, that is, we ask for and allow divine consciousness to work for us, in us, and through us, we're on a path to healing and wholeness. That's good guidance. But on the other hand, if the human ego, with its disregard for other people, is fueling our thoughts, our feelings, our words, our actions, we're going to be sowing discord, not only in our own lives, but the lives of other people, including those that we say are important to us. Harvest time will come. In most cases, looking back now, we can realize that the hardships we're now struggling with are the hardships of seeds sown by previously expressed rejection of ourselves and others. Since we're going to be splitting in two when we feel a demand, what determines the nature of the personas that now appear to us as us? Our consciousness, that is, our habitual way of being, doing, and having, will present the personas that we are familiar with in these situations. In social situations, you can imagine there are certain personas available to you. In a work situation, there are other personas that are available to you. At home, with your family, there are another set of personas available to you. When you're driving a car, there is another set of personas with you. And if you ever watched people who flip into a persona that you were ill-prepared for, it is amazing. I can recall years ago on Long Island, we were going to drive with friends from Queens into Manhattan for dinner. Now, I had only known the husband outside of a car. And nice guy, mellow guy, reasonable guy, rational guy. But when we got in the car on the Long Island Expressway, driving into the city, I was dealing with a maniac, almost, I couldn't decide, homicidal or suicidal, but this guy was so hateful, so vindictive, so critical, it was like, wow, what is going on with this person? And his wife said, oh, yeah, well, he's just like this behind the wheel. So you may be familiar with those kind of circumstances, too. So how we act is based upon how we think or feel or speak. Shyness is a habitual way of being and doing and having. So is feistiness. So is being withdrawn. It seems to me that the split leaves two personas available each time. One appears to be continuous. This is the higher level aspect of our consciousness. We're designed to be good, to be connected, to be spiritual, to be loving. That seems to me, at the end of a split, is still available to us. It constantly is seeking a higher level of love and respect in its dealing with whatever the objects of its attention are. The other persona, though, is personality-oriented, ego-driven. It's fear-based, lust-based. It sees threats. It doesn't see equals. It wants what it wants, comfort, safety, possessions, all without regard for other people. In stark terms, without dealing with nuances, we could say that this persona has the tendencies of a caveman or a coward. Because this persona is under much more stress, the habitual tendency is going to be to fight or flee, and is quickly and easily and immediately going to be presented to his or her limited awareness. And it's going to appear that that's a suitable approach to satisfy these urges. We could look at this person's personality traits and see the patterns they employ in order to achieve these purposes. One, avoid abandonment. And this refers to keeping, not losing, electrons, both personal and things that they possess, material goods, spouses, boyfriends, girlfriends, whatever they value, they collect those to them, and they're seeking to avoid those things leaving, either of their own volition or being taken by other people. The second thing is this sense of being safe. And this shows up as people behaviors as being standoffish, withdrawn, really aggressive or hostile, and variations in between those two. Some of these behaviors are really geared to, when you start to think of it, to scare away the perceived saber-toothed tiger. Or people growling or acting tough or whatever. It's really designed to try to scare off the threat. And then there are also some of our behaviors that are designed to help us outrun the threats. And then the third point is to maintain privacy. Almost as if what we have done or not done in our lives, or what we have thought or didn't think during our lives, or what we said or didn't say in our lives, are unique to us. They're uniquely bad and nobody else did them. And if people knew that we did or didn't, or said or didn't say, or thought or didn't think this, they would abandon us and or harm us directly. With increasing awareness or mindfulness about ourselves, we can know about these tendencies and we can make other choices. We can take steps to heal when we start going in that split direction. So let's go back to the higher level persona that comes when we split in two. We know that the lower level awareness person is drawing information from habits or from learned or mislearned experiences over the course of life, the stuff they've been taught or heard on the playground field or on street corners or in Sunday school or in school. But where is the higher level of awareness person drawing energy from? The higher level awareness part of us is drawing energy from divine consciousness. Do we always know that? No. Sometimes the noise the ego is making is so loud that we can't hear the awareness that we are receiving in this higher part of us. The whole point is to know that we as humans have a noisy, frightened, angry persona who can be put in charge of our lives when we are in a stressful situation. Once we fully understand that idea, we can choose to be or do and have from a more constant, higher level self. In the book Christ Returns Reveal Startling Truth on page 160, letter 4, Christ says something that our lower awareness ego does not understand, and it is this: no one can rob a person of their importance except the person himself by his denial of his value. On page 164, letter 4, no matter what you do, what you possess, the position you occupy in life, there is no limit to your potential development for good. There is no limit to the potential grandeur and glory of your being. Your only limitation is in the amount of time and energy you are prepared to devote to meditating on your source of being and opening your human consciousness to enter into it and to receive it into your mind. And on page 168 in letter 4, it is your lack of faith which withdraws energy from the natural flow of Father, Allah, love in your bodies, relationships, and lives. To recap, every split in two offers us the chance to reach out in thought and feelings to divine consciousness and ask for enlightenment, or turn our lives over to our ego and allow it to run amok, creating more suffering for us and for others. The split is inevitable. The choice is up to us as to which person, persona, ascends. I'd like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from letter 8 in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. we know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.